Our Lavish Post-Apocalyptic Lifestyle, written and read by X-Man-Hater. The first time it happens, Castiel appears out of nowhere, trench coat flapping and hair sticking up all over the place like the good old days, Dean pointedly does not think, and burns the demon currently choking Dean up against a wall back to hell, and then disappears again almost instantly. Dean is understandably confused, with a side of grateful. As he pants, rubbing a hand over his sore throat, he tries to remember how long it's been since he last saw Cass. At least 6 months, maybe longer. It's only been 3 months that he's been hunting again, pushed out of Lisa's quiet house, half by her refusal to let him drink himself to death, and half by his own intense restlessness. He misses her and Ben, but he always knew it was only a stopgap measure, a desperate attempt to keep a promise to Sam. She knew it, too. Said so when she gave him the choice to stay or go, both of them perfectly aware that he would go. Now he's drinking less, but only because he's found a strange peace in his solitary work, going after the monsters that seem much smaller than before he knew about angels and demons and the end of the world. It's lonely and tiring, and he knows that sooner or later he'll miscalculate and get himself killed. And he tries not to dwell on the fact that he's looking forward to that final mistake. By now he's trained himself not to look for Sam or Castiel, or even Bobby. He's just fine on his own, thank you very much, and an angel rescue is the last thing he wants anyway. Dicks with wings, that's all they are. He picks himself up from the dirty ground and has a bad night back at the motel, goes through a bottle of whiskey and thinks too hard about the past until he passes out. The next day, the whole thing seems like a dream, and he lets it fall away like one. The second time Cass saves his bacon without being asked, Dean is pretty fucking pissed off at the world in general, and Sam in particular. "Look," says Sam, when Dean's finished with the barrage of, "So you're back from the dead. Are you really you or some kind of creature?" tests, and satisfied that it really is his stupid-ass brother who stumbled into Dean's campsite, looking almost exactly as he had the last time Dean had seen him. "I'm sorry I didn't come to you right away. I wanted to give you a chance at being something other than my big brother." Shows what he knows is Dean's only thought, and before he can really rip into Sam for being alive for 7 months without letting him know about it, puppy eyes be damned, the Wendigo he's been tracking attacks, and he puts his anger into good use. The rage doesn't really work like it should, though, and before he knows it, Sam is down for the count, and the Wendigo has Dean slung over its back. Through blurred vision, Dean sees Cass appear right behind the Wendigo, and his only coherent thought is to wonder how the hell Cass even knows where they are. Castiel brushes a hand through the air, and reality twists, along with Dean's stomach. And then the world comes back into focus, the Wendigo is gone, and Dean and Sam are back at Dean's crap motel room, the Impala parked carefully outside, and Cass is nowhere to be seen. After making sure Sam's okay, Dean gets down to business. "Did he know you were alive? Did you two make some kind of weird creeper club where you stalk me and then swap 6 stories? "What? Dean, I haven't seen Castiel since Lucifer blew his head open. I didn't even know he was still alive." "Yeah," Dean replies, slightly annoyed to have his ridiculous theory disproved. It had made a twisted kind of sense and would have made for some awesome teasing. "God brought him back, all juiced up, and he fixed Bobby, and flapped off to heaven to boss everyone around." "And you haven't seen him again until now?" Sam asks skeptically. "Weren't you like his only friend left in heaven and on earth?" "He seemed pretty glad to be rid of us mud monkeys back then," Dean insists. He doesn't know how well he hides his feelings about that, just tries to keep his voice steady and low. "But a few months ago I was after this demon, and Cass showed up and took care of it in 2 seconds and disappeared again right away, just like this time." "Well, he's looking out for you, so I guess he's not all the way back on Team Angel." Dean ignores the tiny flare of warmth that pushes through him at the thought. Sam hadn't seen Castiel at the end, weird vibrations of power thrumming in the air around him, his stare cold and distant, like Dean hadn't really remembered it could be. "Let's focus on the important thing here, Sammy. Where the hell have you been, and how the hell did you get back?" Sam sighs. "I'd tell you if I could, man. The last thing I remembered was pulling Michael into the pit behind me. Then I woke up in the parking lot of a Denny's by the dumpster with a duffel bag of my stuff and a hangover. And an epic case of stupidity that led you to believe I wouldn't want to know you were alive, Dean points out sarcastically. Thanks for that. Can we not fight about it? Sam asks tiredly, twisting his hand through his hair in a gesture so familiar to Dean that it makes his chest ache. I really just wanted to do the right thing for you for once, the unselfish thing. I thought a lot about what you said, about only being my brother and nothing else. There's way more Lucifer in me than I want, and I don't want to keep going down that path. The honest confession sort of takes the oomph out of Dean's righteous fury. And then I saw you at Lisa's, Sam continues, and you looked peaceful, so I just let you go and checked up now and then to make sure you were okay. So you were stalking me, Dean says, ignoring everything else to focus on that crucial detail. That's classy and not at all creepy in the slightest. Sam's face wrinkles into a familiar bitchy look. Dean. Sam. It's the only reply that particular look warrants. The knowledge that Sam is back, really actually back, chooses that moment to sink in, of course. And before he knows what's happening, Dean's hugging his brother as tightly as he can. He only pulls away when he feels his face getting suspiciously wet. The tightness around Dean's eyes eases after that, and he and Sam fall back into their old rhythms. He doesn't even give Sam too much grief about following Dean around like a lost puppy, and not ever letting Dean know about it. They avoid talking about the mystery of Sam's return to life, but they are both more at peace each day. And if Dean spends an excessive amount of time looking expectantly around for a flash of blue eyes or a trench coat during their hunts, Sam doesn't mention it. When it happens for the third time 2 months later, Dean doesn't really have an opinion right away, because he's unconscious for the whole rescue. Well, Sam calls it that. Dean prefers to think of it as an unnecessary angelic assist. They're after a nasty poltergeist, which isn't even in the top 20 list of the most dangerous hunts Dean's been on, but the stupid thing gets the drop on him in a dilapidated old farmhouse where it lives, and knocks him out cold with the giant grandfather clock. It's not his finest moment. He wakes up groggy and extremely exhausted, but without the throbbing headache he should have, which is his first clue that something unusual has happened. That had been a huge fucking clock. He's lying in bed and he can hear Sam talking from the other side of the room. He can't really force his eyes open, so he just listens, trying to make sense of what's going on. Him, Sam insists. He'll never say it, but he misses you. Dean has the vague thought that Sam had better not be talking about him before another voice replies. I have my reasons, it says, low and gravelly, and no, it can't be. It can, though, he remembers. It's happened twice already, even if Cass hasn't stayed around after the action before now. He misses Sam's reply, lost in his thoughts, trying to get his throat to work so that he can insist he doesn't miss Cass at all. Hard to get, Castiel says, and Sam lets out a bark of surprised laughter. Seriously? He asks. Oh man, I am never letting either of you live this down. Dean pushes at the blanket covering his body and manages a grunt that's meant to be Sam's name, but sounds more like the last cry of a dying animal. Breaking up the conversation, he sure is very inappropriate and opens his eyes. Sam's face is hovering close, and behind him is Castiel, unruffled and still there. Hello, Dean, he says, staying on the other side of the room. You okay? Sam asks. Got hit pretty hard. Dean shakes his head slowly. I'm fine. Why is Cass here? Sam sniggers and looks over at Cass, causing Dean's suspicion to grow. Clearly, Sam and Cass shouldn't be left alone together anymore. Dean follows Sam's gaze and rests his eye on Castiel's tie, messy and hanging in a loose knot around his neck. Dean can't bring himself to look any further up. I came to help you out with the poltergeist, and I stayed to tell you how Sam was restored, so that you wouldn't worry needlessly and possibly get into unnecessary trouble, Castiel says. It was God. When he restored me, he also pulled Sam's soul from the pit and fashioned a new body to place it in. God, Dean snorts derisively, to cover his relief at knowing for sure that Sam won't suddenly be snatched back into hell. You should no longer have any trouble with demonic inclinations, Cass continues, focusing on Sam. You have been cleansed of Azazel's taint. Dean can see Sam's mixed feelings about that, thankfulness and fear both present in his tense look. Good, Dean says firmly. Always wanted a normal little brother. Did you fix his awful taste in music, too? He takes his first look directly at Cass's face as he speaks. It was not me, Dean. It was God. Castiel's eyes don't let Dean know anything he might be thinking or feeling, but the surety in his voice makes Dean feel a little better. Castiel without faith was wrong. Nothing but a reminder of a future Dean wants to forget. Sam is still pretending to be indignant about Dean's music joke, and Dean forces himself to look away, breaks the hold Cass has on him. He's afraid to think about what it means too much. Sam sobers quickly and turns to Castiel. Just thank you, Cass, or thank God for me, or something. I didn't deserve it, but I'm really grateful. Castiel just stands there being stoic, nods in reply, then twitches noticeably. Forgive me, he says. There are events in heaven which require my attention. Before Dean can even begin to protest, Cass is gone. He seriously sucks at this hello and goodbye thing, Sam sighs. At least his timing's good when it comes to rescues. That starts the whole argument about rescues versus unneeded angelic interference, and once Sam brings up Dean's habit of swooning in Castiel's arms, it's on. Pretty soon, Sam and Dean are both having too much fun sniping at each other about nothing at all to bother with rehashing the news Castiel gave them and what it might mean. Dean's pretty clear in his own mind that it's better to enjoy what he has now than to worry about when it might be taken away or to think about what was still missing, anyway. Damn staring freak of an angel, he huffs quietly every now and then to himself. By the time Castiel plays superhero for the fourth time, Dean has decided on a course of action, so he's prepared when he's suddenly released from the grip of a nasty vampire, who probably used to be a pro football player judging by his size. Dean gets to his feet right away and zeroes in on Cass, who has just decapitated the huge vampire, as well as the two others who had been attacking Sam, all without touching any of them, and yells before Castiel can disappear. Hey, Cass! He turns and walks over to Dean, staring steadily. Dean swallows. This had seemed easier in his head. So you're in charge up there now, huh? How's that going? Oh, God, he hears Sam mumble in the background. Seriously? He doesn't spare a glance for anything but Castiel, who looks pleased, like he's never been asked about his day before. Maybe he hasn't. It has been difficult to get the remaining angels to listen to reason, Cass replies. Even with the obvious proof of God's favor, there have been many of my brothers who refused to believe that the earth and humanity should be preserved. Sounds rough, Dean says inanely. Like he knows anything about ruling a vast metaphysical kingdom of angels? Wait, was it even metaphysical? But Cass doesn't seem to think it's a stupid thing to say. It was at first, but I have learned many useful things on earth, and Dean has trouble keeping himself from going weak-kneed. Seriously, he says to himself, seriously? At the sneaky grin Cass can't keep from his face. His face must be making its own look, because Cass elaborates without being asked, moving a step closer. Once you have been one of four people working to stop the apocalypse, you have little patience for petty arguments. I leaned very heavily on the threat of righteous smiting at first, and after I had bested all of the loudest complainers, the rest fell in line. Cass smiles in satisfaction, and damn, that's a good look for him. It's not perfect, Cass adds hastily. There are still many changes that need to be made, but I believe the bulk of the work has been accomplished, or at least started in most cases. So you don't need to stay in heaven all the time anymore. Dean moves closer in, trying to get a read on Cass's thoughts. Castiel purses his lips and nods. I believe I may have more free time than I first believed I would, he says. Well, you know, the back seat's always free. He stumbles on the words. You can always drop by, you know. Not just for fights and stuff. Oh, God, he thinks. This is serious if I've been reduced to my 12-year-old self's vocabulary. Castiel drops his gaze and then looks back up. You have my phone number, he says quietly. Dean becomes aware of how vastly his personal space is being violated then, because Sam coughs loudly. He jumps back awkwardly, missing the annoyed glance Cass sends in Sam's direction. The moment's long gone, anyway, and when Castiel makes his Must go, terribly busy and important face. Dean doesn't stop him. He does smack Sam on the side of the head as they walk back to the Impala, just for fun, and soundly refuses to acknowledge any of his brother's taunts about angel boyfriends. But he doesn't deny it, either. The fifth time isn't strictly an assist. Rescue, Sam insists, every time, that fucker. Dean feels fairly confident, after the previous incident of unneeded yet still sort of enjoyable angelic interference, that Cass won't mind coming for a less than urgent visit. Taking the chance that Castiel meant what he said about his cell phone, or at least had some kind of angelic Winchester monitoring service set up, he texts a simple message to a number he's kept himself from trying for the last 12 months. 5 minutes later, Castiel appears next to the small dinette table with a delicious-smelling pizza box in one hand and a six-pack in the other. "Dude," Dean says, "you fucking rock." Cass sets the pizza and beer down on the table and twitches his shoulders in a tiny shrug. "Your text indicated that it was an emergency," he replies. "I didn't want to be held responsible if Sam came back to find you dead from starvation. And Jophiel had just thrown a tantrum requiring an extensive cleanup crew all throughout Australia, so I needed a break." Dean takes one of the rickety motel chairs, turns it around and sits, leaning forward with his arms around the back. He cracks open a beer and motions to the other chair. "You gonna sit and have some pizza?" he asks, watching Cass carefully. Castiel moves smoothly, tucking the trench coat under his legs as he sits, drawing Dean's eyes down to his slim hips before they disappear under the table. "This is getting ridiculous," Dean thinks. He hadn't let himself acknowledge how stupidly attracted he was until Cass, the guy who had defied heaven and exploded himself for Dean 3 times, stayed away long enough to make Dean unable to ignore how much he missed him when he wasn't there. Like a really cliched romance novel. A light bulb clicks, and he can't stop himself from blurting it out. "Hard to get. You told Sam you were playing hard to get." Castiel looks up sharply and stares searchingly at Dean. He must find what he's looking for because he nods, resting his arms on the table in front of him. "I really did have quite a lot to do in heaven," he says, "but I admit that when I realized how much I missed being here with you, I wanted to find out if you felt the same way, so I watched, and never stayed as long as I wanted to whenever I did see you in person." Dean shakes his head. "You and Sam, seriously, such creepy stalkers." His tone is playful, and he likes that a year in heaven hasn't removed Castiel's sense of humor, likes the smile Cass gives him. Everything's pretty clear in that moment, and he feels the gravity pulling them together. He moves his hand across the table to grab Cass's, then stands, dragging Cass up as well. They stand close, and Dean moves his face closer, and then they meet halfway, coming together in a pretty damn good first kiss. It would have gotten even better, he's sure, if not for Sam coming into the room at that precise moment. "My eyes!" Sam exclaims as he drops his bag to cover his face with his hands, as if he's the one with the right to be upset. Dean pulls away from Cass, keeping a firm grip on his hand. "You weren't supposed to be back until tomorrow," he tells Sam accusingly. "Bobby had to leave for a hunt, and I'd finished looking at that book anyway, so I came back," Sam protests. "If I'd known you were in the middle of some serious blasphemy, I would have called ahead." "I'm always in the middle of serious blasphemy," Dean replies, at the same time that Castiel says, "Our current actions are in no way blasphemous in the new heavenly order, Sam." Dean smirks. "Benefits of sleeping with the boss," he leers at Sam. "God, that's it. I'm getting another room," Sam says, "a room far away from this one." He picks up the bag he'd dropped earlier and turns to give Dean a look, one that says, "This is not over, and I will make your life hell until you spill all the juicy details." Dean can live with that if it means a night alone with Cass. Once Sam closes the door behind himself, Dean moves right back into Cass's arms. They kiss again, and Dean is really glad that this isn't against the rules, because he'd do it even then, but it might be bad for Cass. He pushes his lips against Cass's mouth, feels the eternal stubble rub against his cheek, then pulls away just barely far enough to speak. "You're staying the night, aren't you?" he asks confidently. Cass smiles again. God, he loves that smile. "Of course. I didn't do all of this work only to let you get away with a few kisses." Cass looks down. "I will need to return to heaven in the morning," he says quietly. Dean sighs, fingers fiddling with Cass's tie. "I kind of figured. It's okay, you know. When can you visit again after that?" He tries not to look as disappointed as he feels. "Most likely tomorrow night or the night after, I imagine," Cass replies, and Dean's really going to smack him. After the awesome sex, of course. "You did that on purpose," he complains. "Is Sam giving you lessons?" Castiel doesn't answer in words, and Sam is pretty much the last thing on Dean's mind for the rest of the night. "Wait," Dean says, halting Castiel's hand on its way down his chest and stomach as they lounge in the bed the next morning. "How the hell did you keep finding me? I thought those Enochian sigils were fail-proof. You shouldn't have been able to find me." Cass has the grace to look slightly ashamed. "Sam's body is completely new, without the carvings he had before he died. I could find him easily." It takes a second for Dean to realize what's wrong with that answer, and by the time he asks again, Cass has almost succeeded in distracting him with his mouth. Dean pushes Castiel's head away insistently. "You're getting better at lying, but you're not that good," he pants. "The first time, before Sam, you knew where I was and you shouldn't have." Castiel smirks and shrugs his shoulders casually, and Dean almost says to hell with it and pulls him back down. "I made a change to the wording of the sigils on your ribs before I returned to heaven," he admits, sounding not at all sorry. "A loophole to let me, just me, find you when I wanted. I had more than enough power to accomplish a simple word addition." Dean's almost impressed. "You sneaky bastard," he says fondly, and yanks Cass's head down for a kiss. It took more than a year, but Dean's pretty happy with his post-apocalyptic life. The end. Suggestions for a Happy Life with Your Powerful and Overprotective Significant Other. Written and read by X-Man-Hater. Summary. Being an angel's boyfriend can be tricky, okay? But Dean's determined to do his best. Number 1. Think about asking for help every now and then. "You are easily the most annoying person I have dealt with all week, Dean Winchester," Castiel growls. "And considering that Jophiel and the literal Leviticus faction played that trick on Paris Fashion Week yesterday, and I had to spend the entire day altering people's memories and unraveling fabric, and that tomorrow is the monthly Archangel meeting, that is really saying something." Okay, Dean gets the frustrated bit. It can't be easy to make the trip from heaven to have date night with your boyfriend after a hard day at work, only to find him laid up in the hospital in a full body cast. But doesn't said full body cast get him any sympathy points? Dean wiggles the fingers of his left hand, currently the only part of his body that happens to be movable, at his irate yet still really hot angelic keeper, and attempts to explain. "It wasn't supposed to happen," he reasons loudly, once Castiel has settled into a silent glower. "One werewolf, me and Sam can handle that, no problem. It's not like we knew it was a whole pack." He leaves out the part where he went alone, without Sam. This line of defense still backfires horribly. "And what do you think a reasonable person would do upon learning it was a whole pack? Maybe a reasonable person would pick up his cell phone and use his direct line to a very powerful angel and ask for backup." "There wasn't time," Dean protests as he watches Castiel pace up and down his tiny hospital room. And I didn't want to bother you." He doesn't even think about mentioning that Castiel could prevent something like that if he'd been watching. He'd fought long and loud for the right to make his own stupid decisions without being monitored all the time by Cass and or Sam. But maybe taking on a werewolf pack hadn't been the best way to start making those decisions. Castiel stops pacing and stares straight at Dean, but he can't enjoy it like he usually does. "Did you think I wouldn't be interested in helping?" Cass asks disbelievingly. Dean sighs. "No, you help out all the time. I wanted to maybe get through a hunt the old-fashioned way. Sam is starting to get sloppy, always depending on angelic bailouts." Castiel's glare gets a little softer, which is still not really what Dean would call soft on any other person. Dean squirms inside his cast. "I didn't realize you felt that way," Cass replies. "I believe I could keep from interfering on more mundane hunts in the future. If you promise to keep from being so mind-numbingly stupid that you end up in the hospital on a regular basis. Dean jumps at the truce. Done. I don't want to end up in the hospital again. Compromise, Dean has learned, actually is the most important thing in a relationship. In the interest of making your trip here worth it, maybe you could speed up the healing process, he adds, with a smirk he hopes conveys exactly what he means by worth it. I should make you tough it out, Cass replies huffily, seemingly unaffected by the suggestion of their usual date-night activities. Perhaps then you'd actually learn. Even as he speaks, though, Castiel is moving closer to Dean with two fingers outstretched, and by the time Dean thinks to complain about the insult, the cast is gone and he can suddenly move again. Thanks, babe, he says, taking advantage of his suddenly mostly naked body and the resulting response from Castiel, and launching straight into a kiss that would probably get them kicked out if anyone happened to see. Cass kisses back for a long moment with his arms tied around Dean's waist, then shoves him gently back. Get dressed, he says. Sam has dinner waiting, and then I believe we will have time to make my trip worth it and more. Dean complies, but very slowly. When they do get back to the motel, Dean's hair is suspiciously messy, and he suspects his face might have that glassy, just-been-kissed-within-an-inch-of-his-life euphoric look, but really, Sam has seen worse. Sam, it turns out, is still a little pissed at Dean's reluctance to ask for help. And, okay, possibly he's mostly pissed at the way Dean snuck out of the motel and attempted to take care of the werewolf, singular, or so he thought, by himself. Point is, Dean's still not sure why he got stuck with two overprotective lugs who think he's a precious wilting flower. Halfway through the greasy burger, Sam informs him he doesn't deserve it all. They both start in again. I don't know why you think you're invincible, Dean, Sam mutters, picking through his rabbit food. Haven't you been hospitalized enough for one lifetime? It is reckless to believe you never need backup, Castiel agrees. I did make him promise to be more careful in the future, he adds, looking at Sam intently. Sam snorts. Well, maybe it'll stick when it comes from you. That's enough of that. It's my job to take care of you, Sammy, not the other way around, and I will be more careful. Sam looks like he might play the "you promised to be more than just my big brother" card, which would seriously destroy the mood, but he just takes a deep breath and lets it out slowly. He turns to Cass with a sneaky look that Dean doesn't trust at all. You could always get Dean to do things he doesn't want to do the traditional way, Sam begins. Castiel quirks his head, and Dean does not have any sort of "that's so cute" reaction to that, thank you very much. What way is that? Cass asks. Withholding sex, Sam states with a gloating smile. Dean doesn't have to smack him, though, because Cass's response makes them both bust out laughing. How would that work? He asks with a confused squint. I would suffer just as much as Dean in that scenario. I'll explain later, Dean finally gets out while Sam is still snickering into his salad. And I promise I'll ask for help when I need it, so you two can just let it go, all right? They both agree, and Dean smiles and settles in to enjoy his burger and Castiel's covert hovering, which always happens after Dean's been hurt, and usually manifests itself in a mysterious, never-ending supply of fries and subtle PDA. Not that he'd ever admit he enjoys it, but luckily he doesn't have to, because Cass understands. Number 2. Don't make fun of your SO's job, unless he does first. No, I'm serious. It's a monthly Archangel board meeting, Dean slurs, waving his beer can in front of Sam's face. They vote on shit, like who has to take babysitting duty on Friday nights and who gets to come to Earth and why. And Cass always has to break up these arguments about whose wings are the biggest or something like that. Board meetings? Sam laughs, taking a swig from his own beer. They're enjoying a post-hunt drink in the motel room, kicking back like they haven't in a while. Yeah, totally. Dean's enjoying his newfound trove of humorous angel stories, to say the least. And then one night, Cass woke up and twitched, you know, like he does when he's getting called to heaven, and then he turned to me and said, "There's a leak in the antechamber," and disappeared. Fucking hilarious, man. I never would have thought angels were such bureaucrats, Sam says. I never thought heaven could get leaks, Dean replies, almost snorting beer through his nose. Can you imagine angel plumbing? They're both too busy laughing to notice that Castiel has appeared in the room until he clears his throat loudly. Dean jumps guiltily, and Sam makes the dun-dun-dun noise. Dean claps his hand over Sam's mouth. Shut up, doofus. He stands and lurches over to Cass, getting his arm around Cass's shoulder for a nice, drunk hug. Hey, babe, he whispers into Cass's neck. Was just talking about you. Castiel doesn't change his stoic expression, but he does hug Dean back, ever so slightly. With Cass, it's all about the slightly, Dean's brain rambles. Sam seems to sober up a bit and gets to his feet. I can get another room, he tells Cass. Dean frowns, then smiles when he realizes what that means. He presses against Castiel, angling his hips and conveniently forgetting that Sam hasn't left yet. Then he blinks and finds himself on the other side of the room along with Sam, both sitting on the edge of one of the sagging motel beds. Castiel is frowning at them, but that's like his default expression, so Dean's not worried. Yet. I think you should enjoy your night together, Cass says. I will see you both tomorrow when you've sobered up. And then he's gone. Man, Sam laughs in a sing-song voice. You are gonna get it tomorrow. Dean brushes it off. Nah, he'll be fine. And just like that, they move on to a new drunken conversational topic. And the next thing Dean knows, it's morning, and he's trying to peel his eyes open and figure out why there's a rotting gym sock in his throat. He groans and rolls over, the events of the night before rushing into his brain. Oh God, he's gonna get it. Sam's in about the same shape, and it takes him a while to get it together enough to make it to a diner down the street for a greasy hangover cure. They eat slowly in almost complete silence, and when they're done, Sam stands and yawns. I'm gonna head to the library, he says, so you can, you know, face the music. Dean smiles faintly. Wish me luck. He watches Sam make his way down the street outside the diner window and pulls his phone out of his pocket. He sends a quick text. Sober now, want to come over? And walks back to the motel to wait. 10 minutes later, Castiel appears. He slouches, hands in his pockets. Did you have a good time with Sam? He asks. Yeah, it was fun. Wait, aren't you mad? Dean's confused. Castiel doesn't look mad, and it's not like something he usually hides. Why would I be mad? Castiel moves closer and pulls Dean down onto the bed with him, leaning them against each other, and puts his arm around Dean. Normally this would be a bit too close to non-naked cuddling for Dean's comfort, but he's too flummoxed to notice. Because I got drunk and told Sam your angel stories and made fun of them? Oh, Cass says. No, I'm not mad. You didn't mean it maliciously. Dean splutters a bit. But you should totally be mad at me, he protests. It's not your fault heaven seems comical, Castiel says matter-of-factly. If you could see it as I do, you'd realize that. You can't perceive all the nuances, that's all. Okay, Dean's pretty sure that counts as an insult, but right now he doesn't really care. Castiel slides his arm lower around Dean's waist and turns in to face him. Besides, he says softly, the board meetings are nothing but wing-measuring contests. Why do you think I tell you those stories? I enjoy telling my brothers what you have to say about their idiocy. You use my comebacks? Dean asks incredulously. You use my stories, Castiel replies. I should make you save the best ones, he continues. That way I can tell them to Sam and Bobby myself. Dean's still stuck on the angels getting a whole earful of Dean Winchester thing. Am I famous in heaven? He asks teasingly. Cass grins slyly. I think you could say you are infamous in heaven, the specter I invoke to strike panic into the hearts of angels. Dude, I'm totally the bad boy on a motorcycle you used to make your parents nervous. Dean's going to enjoy telling Sam about this, but when he does, he leaves out the part where Cass makes a bad pun about bad boys, which leads to nakedness. Some things are private. Number 3. Don't forget about your other relationships. It takes approximately 2 days for Dean to catch on. Sam's always been kind of whiny, though, and it might have taken longer if Castiel hadn't declared a heaven-wide holiday. Under duress, but trying to teach angels about free will led to such things. That apparently lasted for 2 whole Earth weeks and required his presence for the entire time, since my absence could result in chaos, Dean. And I suspect Lyrafel may use the commotion to try and break Michael and Lucifer out of hell. Which, what did he expect, making himself indispensable like that? Not that Dean was bitter. Anyway, Sam's been moping extra hard. And when Dean finally figures it out, Sam's on his way to an Olympic gold medal in annoying little brother behavior. After having to go out and get his own dinner for the second day in a row because Sam forgot, and not being able to take a shower because Sam's used all the hot water, Dean realizes it's not just sharing a room for the first time in a while that has Sam acting up, and decides it's time to fix whatever's wrong. He doesn't dwell on the fact that he's the one initiating a serious conversation. Stability changes a guy, okay? Sam's sighing loudly every so often and messing around on his laptop over on his bed, and Dean refrains from making the 13-year-old girl joke, but only just. "Hey, Sammy," he starts, throwing a lumpy motel pillow across the room at his brother's head. It lands softly, but Sam still jumps. "Jesus, Dean," he yells. "What do you want?" "Just to spend some time with my only brother. What's on your enormous mind?" Sam sighs again. "Nothing." "Come on, tell me. Is it a girl? Did you meet a girl and have no idea how to ask her out?" Sam frowns and looks scarily close to pouting. "No, shut up." "Man, I'm asking about your feelings here," Dean says. "Might want to take advantage of this one-time offer." "I guess I'm just surprised you can shut up about Castiel long enough to realize I'm even alive," Sam spits out finally. Okay, that definitely is not what Dean expected to hear. It kind of cracks him up, though he can see Sam is serious. "Are you jealous? Of Cass? Really?" Sam turns blotchy red and looks 2 seconds away from stuffing his face in his pillow, a look Dean knows well, though he hasn't seen it in about 15 years. "No," Sam says, "not really. I'm just tired, and I guess I just never thought you'd be settled down before me. I'm used to being better at relationships than you, and now I can't even manage to ask a girl out on a date. And dude, you do talk about him pretty much all the time." He runs his hand through his messy hair and looks up at Dean with a half-assed smile. Dean isn't remotely qualified to counsel anyone about relationships, and being better at them than Sam, currently, isn't saying all that much. On the other hand, he's been an expert at handling a moping Sam all his life. He stands and claps his hands together. "Okay, come on, let's go." Dean prods Sam's waist with his foot, pushing him up and off the bed. "Go where?" Sam whines. "I'm not up for a big night on the town." "We're going to do your favorite things," Dean replies. "First we'll get a wimpy little after-dinner snack at some diva cafe, then we'll get drunk at a wine bar and I'll let you lecture me about my bad habits until you pass out. It'll be great." Sam looks intrigued and distrustful. "The cafe with the cheesecake?" "The one with the cheesecake. Now get off of your ass." 2 hours later, Dean's plan is a success, and he wishes he had cut Sam off after 2 bottles. "Do you know how loud you are?" Sam's a happy drunk tonight, sweeping his arms to encompass the whole room as he tells everyone about Dean's sex life. "I had to get another room last week because I could hear the headboard thumping from 2 floors away, Dean. 2 floors. Dean is tipsy enough not to blush, but it's a near thing. "Will you shut up about my love life?" he hisses. "Aww," Sam practically yells. "My big brother finally fell in love. I'm just really happy for you, even if I never want to hear you say Castiel's name like that again." See, this is why Dean doesn't let Sam drag him into wine bars. But at least Sam's not sad anymore, and Dean considers the whole ordeal worth it when Sam's reaction to Castiel's return is to clap him on the back with a huge paw and say, "Welcome to the family." Well, he also says, "Guess it's time for me to switch motels. You two have a fun night," as he winks at Cass, but Dean's letting that go for now. Number 4. Don't panic. No, seriously, don't panic. It's 3 days later when Dean suddenly has his long-awaited gay relationship freakout. It's not a gay freakout, really, because he's long since accepted that he's not all the way straight. After spending 40 years in hell and then living through an apocalypse, he can put things into perspective. In the big picture, liking the feel of stubble and the fact that Cass can hold him down with one hand isn't anything to be worried about. And if he's being exceptionally honest, he'll acknowledge that even before hell, he'd thought about it. So maybe it's more of a relationship freakout, period. Castiel had spent the night, and when Dean woke up in a familiar warm sprawl all over Cass's chest and thought, "I want to wake up like this every day for the rest of my life," he had barely finished thinking it before panic set in and he practically ran to the shower. He'd washed and gotten dressed before Castiel could even think about joining him, and when Dean made up a particularly transparent excuse about shopping for supplies, and didn't Cass need to get back to heaven already, Cass just blanked his face of any expression and disappeared. The next night, Cass comes back as usual and shows no sign that he knows Dean's acting strangely. Dean's flipping frantically through a skin mag in a desperate attempt to convince himself that he still misses boobs at the exact moment Cass shows up, and Castiel doesn't even mention it. Just says hello and drags Dean out to dinner in a bar, despite Dean's best efforts at derailing the whole visit into a sex marathon. At the bar, once their food and beers have been ordered, Dean commandeers a pool table and eyes up a couple of blondes, who quickly ask if they can play. Castiel watches as Dean gathers a crowd, men and women looking on as he shoots pool and flirts with anyone who looks at him more than once. He knows he's doing it, knows the train wreck he's asking for, but he can't stop. Even when his burger arrives, he doesn't go back to the booth where Cass is waiting silently, just balances the plate on the corner of the pool table and takes occasional bites. The first blonde gives him a look eventually, then turns to the corner where Cass sits. "You gonna get in trouble for playing with us?" she asks Dean. He gives her a slow smile. "Nah, he likes to watch," he says. He feels like it's not him talking, like he's seeing things from a distance, unable to stop himself. "Doesn't look like it," she replies, gesturing behind Dean, who only has a second to turn before he feels Castiel's hands on his shoulders. "Excuse us," Cass tells the woman, not unkindly. He pushes Dean along in front of him, and Dean can feel his glare burning a hole in the back of his head as Dean grabs his beer from a table on the way. "Of course," Castiel exclaims once he's shoved Dean back into their booth, less upset than Dean thought he'd looked earlier. "I thought you might be trying to make me angry for some reason, but you're just having your commitment crisis. I should have noticed sooner." "What?" Dean sputters gracelessly, beer spraying all over the table in an epic spit take. Cass shakes his head fondly. "Your crisis, the stage of our relationship where you desperately try to convince yourself that you are still attracted to random women, and that you don't want to be stuck with one partner for the foreseeable future, in order to cover your feelings of inadequacy and your fear that you'll screw everything up and bring nothing but pain to those who love you." That's scarily accurate, Dean is horrified to admit. How do you know all that?" Cass frowns. "Sam was very clear about the symptoms. I'm sure that's what you're experiencing." Cass looks deep in thought for a moment, then fixes his deadly serious stare on Dean, who reacts predictably by feeling equal parts nervous and turned on. He stays still as Cass reaches out to touch his forehead, and then he's sitting on the motel bed as Cass kneels in front of him. Cass keeps his gaze firmly on Dean for a long, long moment before breaking it to shake his head and sigh, sounding heavily put upon. "I know it's not entirely your fault," Cass growls, and Dean shivers. "But you are the most emotionally wrecked human being I have ever seen, including the young girl with the absentee postal worker father at the brothel you took me to. And she didn't even have a brother who loved her." Cass pulls Dean's face toward his own. "I am going to tell you this once, and I expect you to listen. I chose you, Dean. I will not change my mind, and I know my choice is the right one." Dean's trying hard to keep his eyes open, focusing on Castiel's throat, the sliver of skin visible behind his loose collar, but all he wants to do is close them and lean in to kiss Castiel senseless. Cass can see his intention and keeps him at an arm's length, gripping his shoulders. "Do you understand?" "It's an order, not a question." Dean nods, then gasps, "Yes, Cass, come on," reaching for Cass's waist and surging up into the kiss as Cass pushes him back on the bed and covers him with his body. He spends the rest of the night trying to show Cass how much he means it, how well he understands. A few days later, after Cass manages to spill the whole embarrassing ordeal in the bar to Sam, the teasing starts. Sam and Dean are lounging in Bobby's living room, watching TV and snacking on chips and beer while Bobby cleans his guns in the dining room. Cass is away on angel business. "Couldn't you have had your crisis a little earlier?" Sam asks during a commercial. Dean isn't suspicious at first, which just goes to show how relaxed he is now that everything's back to normal. It wasn't a crisis, Sammy. It was character building. I almost won the pool, Sam says. 2 weeks sooner and I could have finally gotten a new laptop without feeling guilty. Dean turns his head sharply. Pool? He asks, practically growling. Bobby hears and yells from the dining room. I nailed it. 7 months in, on the dot. That is absolutely it. Sam, Dean starts calmly, did you have a bet with Bobby about the timing of my not actually a crisis gay crisis? By the end of the sentence, his voice has gotten fairly shrill and much, much louder. Sam barely registers the words over his own laughter. He's shaking on the couch and wheezing for breath, and the sight is enough to deflate Dean's indignation. Bobby comes in and leans against the wall next to the couch, shaking his head, and that's when Dean realizes he's laughing too, leaning against Sam's shoulder with tears in his eyes. Sam's snorting through his nose. Not actually a crisis, gay crisis, he sputters, hands flailing into Dean's face. Yeah, yeah, Dean replies, getting control over his laughter. You owe me half of that pot, Bobby. Like hell I do, boy, Bobby grunts. Make your own damn bets. Sam stops rolling all over the place and nudges Dean with his shoulder. You're such a jerk, Dean. Bitch, Dean replies happily. Yeah, things are back to normal. Number 5. It's okay to think about the future. Life runs along smoothly for a while, or as smoothly as it can go when it involves tracking down monsters and evading the IRS. Good hunts are getting a little hard to find, since demonic activity is at a low Dean hasn't seen in his lifetime before. And sometimes they arrive at the scene of a haunting to find that other hunters have beaten them to the punch. At first it's nice to have a break, but Dean gets restless, and Sam starts looking up colleges and forgetting to clear his browser history, which is how Dean knows about it. He braces himself for change, like he's been doing almost daily since Sam came back, but Sam doesn't make a move until it's been 2 years since the apocalypse. They're at Bobby's, Dean helping with car repairs and Sam hanging around the library, taking a break from motels. Castiel comes for dinner most nights, and 1950s housewife jokes aside, Dean likes the regularity of working on cars all day, and then making dinner for his little makeshift family. One night, as Sam is cleaning up and Cass and Dean are lounging at the table watching him, Sam drops the bomb. So I'm thinking maybe I should go back to school, he says, trying to be nonchalant, but mostly just sounding scared. Oh yeah, Dean replies, what school? I'm thinking the East Coast probably has a place we could agree on, somewhere with a garage I could work at when I'm not enjoying my life as a kept man. Sam turns away from the sink and stares. Castiel's eyes move from Dean to Sam and back again, and Dean thinks he must be enjoying the show. You're not going to try and stop me? Sam asks. Keep me in the family business? Refuse to come along and sever all contact? Well, you may not have noticed, but I'm getting kind of old, Dean replies, shrugging his shoulders. Still hot as hell, but kind of old. I could do with a break from getting slammed in the walls. He sneaks a look at Cass and adds, and I could use a regular bed. I guess this means my prepared lecture about the merits of a college town hunting base is useless, Sam sighs. You didn't, Dean starts, then stops. Who knows? Maybe Sam was that prepared. No, of course not, Sam scoffs, twisting his hands together. But you're really okay with that? Dean surreptitiously plays footsie with Cass under the table and smiles. Yeah, Sam, let's be real boys for a while. Later that night, alone in the guest room with Cass, Dean realizes that this is it. This is the rest of his life, and he's happy about it. He shifts in the bed and looks at Cass, who's been watching him doze, the creeper. You sure you want to do this? Dean asks. Stick around here with the mud monkeys and watch me make an ass of myself and get crap from all the other angels about slumming it? Cass moves a hand lazily up and down Dean's side, scratching lightly with his nails. I believe I've made my feelings about you perfectly clear. I am where I want to be. Are you? I am. You know I am. But what about when I'm old? What happens when I die? Dean wants to shoot himself in the face once he hears what he's saying, but it's out. No helping it now. We will handle that when the time comes, Cass says, and Dean wants to believe him. After all, Cass finishes, I am kind of a big deal in heaven. Dean doesn't argue anymore. The end. A Short Guide to Dealing with Nerds, written and read by X-Man Hater. Summary. Dean realizes he is completely surrounded by nerds. Castiel makes it worth his while to not complain about it. The thing is, he's dating a nerd. A really hot, badass nerd, but a nerd nonetheless. After having grown up with Sam, Dean thinks he should have known better than to fall in love with another one, but apparently it's his lot in life. At the very least, he never should have encouraged Sam and Castiel's friendship, Dean thinks with despair. He watches as his brother and his angel sit on opposite sides of the dining room table, heads bent together over a textbook as Cass explains how Sam's theory about the something of the blah 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 is completely incorrect. Dean sighs and sinks further into the couch cushions, flops his legs noisily on the coffee table, and tries to make it clear how much he disapproves of the current seating arrangement and entertainment plan. No response from the nerd herd. This, Dean thinks morosely, must be why some people withhold sex, so their boyfriends won't get complacent and spend all their time poring over ancient geekery instead of making out or exercising ghosts. Fun things. Dean is contemplating his depressing sexless future and trying to decide how it got so old and predictable when Sam finally seems to realize that Cass has been ignoring Dean for books. Dude, Sam says, nudging Castiel's shoulder, I think your girlfriend's bored. Oh, ha ha, Dean replies. Dean's a girl, that's a new one. And of course I'm bored, you two are ignoring me. He waits for Castiel's inevitable betrayal. Cass likes to target his increasingly hilarious sarcasm at Dean, but for once he's pleasantly surprised. I can assure you that Dean is very much a man. Cass speaks with his usual even inflection, but punctuates his words with an obscene wink at Sam. It's so out of place that Dean and Sam both laugh. My point was that you'll be in trouble if you ignore him much longer, Sam tells Cass. He can only handle so much intelligence before his brain explodes. Screw you, Dean says half-heartedly. I'm smarter than both of you. At least I know how to have a good time. Yeah, Sam replies. Casa Erotica is a real classy way to have fun. Fine, Dean says, rolling off the couch onto his feet. You two enjoy the soul life over there. I'm going to grab a beer and find a decent movie. They both go back to the book they're arguing over, and Dean resigns himself to a movie in an early night. Once they get going, there's not much that can stop them, and ever since Sam started his classes, they've been discussing mythology and religion and who knows what else almost every night. Dean's not jealous, no matter what it looks like. He isn't interested in the history of things the same way Sam and Castiel are, but he isn't stupid, and both of them know it. When it comes to reading people and situations, he's got both of them beat easily, and Sam is hopeless around engines. Castiel relies on his mojo to get him out of tight spots, but all Dean has are his wits and his strength, and he still manages just fine. It's probably one of the things Castiel finds fascinating about him, given how often Cass makes his "How are you still alive and in one piece?" look. The point, Dean thinks, before he gets too maudlin, is that they fit together despite of all of the odds stacked against them. Spending a few nights watching action flicks and listening to Sam and Cass argue about which language best translates the meaning of some ancient poem is a small price to pay for the peace he's found. Dean goes to bed as soon as the movie's over. He's got an 8 a.m. shift at the garage and manages to fall asleep right away, only waking several hours later when Castiel fits into the bed with him. He turns to face Cass and presses in close, shivering when his warm body absorbs Castiel's chill. "Thought you weren't going to stay tonight," he says sleepily as Cass presses cool lips against his neck. "I changed my mind," Cass replies. "I prefer you when you're asleep. It's the only time you don't talk back." Dean smiles. "You like me when I talk back, you liar." Cass starts moving his hands in dangerous directions, one smoothing down Dean's side and gripping his ass, and the other caressing Dean's ear in a way designed specifically to make him go crazy. Dean moans and pushes into Castiel's touch. Cass kisses his neck again and whispers into his ear. "I like it better when you are too fucked out to talk at all," he says roughly, and Dean goes from mildly turned on to hard and desperate in 5 seconds flat. He'd been sure at the beginning that Cass would always be the type to make love, or at least treat sex reverently, and Cass did on occasion draw things out and say ridiculous things about Dean's soul, but most of the time he's like this, growly and obscene, and it never fails to push all of Dean's buttons. Cass kisses him then, hard and messy, drawing another moan from Dean's throat. Dean lets Cass control the kiss and just tries to keep up until Cass reaches down and grips his cock, stroking hard and fast, and Dean has to pull his mouth away to breathe as he arches up into the touch. "I'm going to fuck you now," Cass says, reaching for the lube in the bedside table drawer, and Dean's never been happier to have a home base. It makes storing and finding lube much easier. He stretches up to pull Castile down within reach and kisses him while flipping their positions, so that Dean is straddling Cass, bending in half to keep kissing him while also grinding his ass against Castile's erection. Cass looks slightly disgruntled when Dean pulls back, and Dean laughs into his mouth. "What, you can't fuck me this way?" he teases. Castile grips Dean's waist with one hand and moves the other behind Dean's ass, a wet finger pushing inside, changing his words into moans. Dean notices with relief that Cass's clothes have disappeared in convenient angel fashion, and pushes back against Cass's fingers, two now, moving together, and then down, pressing his dripping cock against Castiel's. It's intense when Cass finally pushes into him. Dean controls their motion for as long as he can, but soon he feels drunk with the pleasure sparking all over his body. Cass holds his hips and drives in hard, and Dean lets Cass take over, relaxes into the set rhythm, and enjoys the ride. "Dean," Cass groans, eyes fixed on Dean's, and Dean can't look away, just stares back and lets short little moans escape his throat as Cass fucks him. From the expression on his face, Cass won't last much longer, and he knows it, and Dean is right there with him. Dean almost loses it the second Cass's hand finds his cock again, stroking roughly, swiping his thumb around the head on the upstroke. Dean holds it together for another minute before he comes, pushing back onto Cass's cock as it hits his prostate perfectly. It lasts for endless seconds, and Dean might be embarrassed by the sounds he's making, desperate moans, if he could even hear himself. Cass doesn't let go, smearing Dean's cum around as he strokes until it almost hurts. Dean is still twitching, coming down from the high and starting to feel sore, when Cass finally comes, gripping Dean's hips with both hands and thrusting up, a perfect expression on his face as his mouth works soundlessly. Dean shivers, pushing down and savoring the rush as Cass fills him. He will never be tired of seeing Cass like this, passionate and wild and completely his. They both hold their positions for a moment, and Dean smiles, catching his breath as Castiel smirks back up at him. Then Dean squawks, a very manly squawk, when Castiel pulls out and flips Dean onto his side, spooning him. Dean wants to protest being manhandled, but he's suddenly much too sleepy to be arguing, and lets Cass hold him close instead. "I would stay and rest with you, but I must be in heaven soon," Castiel says into the quiet sometime later. "I will see you in a few days, depending on how whiny the Archangel representative is this week." Dean sinks into his pillow, barely conscious as sleep takes him under. "It's okay," he slurs. "Take me that long to recover." Cass runs a hand through Dean's hair and kisses him on the forehead before getting up and leaving in a silent rush of air. The next day, when Dean gets home with dinner, takeout from the Thai restaurant around the corner, spicy enough to give an angel heartburn, Sam keeps giving him an irritated look. It's unwarranted, in Dean's opinion. He hasn't done anything particularly annoying in a while, and bringing home delicious takeout should make up for that anyway. He ignores it, and of course that makes Sam bring it up. He starts hesitantly. "Do you remember that conversation we had about soundproofing your bedroom?" Dean pushes down the urge to wince at the implication. "What's the matter, Sammy?" he says, in what he hopes is a suitably carefree manner. "You still jealous that I'm getting some more often than you?" Sam shudders. "Ew, Dean. Just, ew. I am not interested in knowing anything more than I already do about your sex life. Let's just soundproof the room and forget we ever had this conversation." Dean pretends to be deep in thought. "Maybe Cass can just mojo the room silent whenever we're having sex," he suggests, then shakes his head. "Nah, he likes it when I'm loud. Guess we better get on that soundproofing." "Urgh," Sam groans. "Fine, just shut up." "Aw, Sammy, don't be jealous just because sex trumps nerdiness." "I am not jealous," Sam protests. "Besides," Dean continues relentlessly, "if you didn't monopolize Cass all the time, I wouldn't have to have loud sex to remind him which Winchester he likes best." Dean ignores the evil look Sam shoots at him and eats happily. Yes, okay, he lives with the nerds. But he gets to make fun of one of them and have scorching hot sex with the other, so it evens out in the end. The end. Hegemonies and Other Heavenly Problems. Written and read by X-Man Hater. Summary. Castiel has an existential crisis involving his management style. Dean is very supportive, and Sam provides the literature. Or, the one where Dean keeps trying to solve problems with his mouth. Castiel appears in the middle of the living room, sits heavily, and lets out a sigh. Dean feels scarily like someone's girlfriend when his first instinct is to give Cass a hug and ask about his day. His second instinct is to make sure Sam never hears him using the girlfriend simile, because getting another lecture about outdated gender roles and misogyny and how being gay now doesn't give him a pass on perpetuating oppression is the last thing he wants. In the end, Dean just hands Cass a cold beer and offers him a blowjob. Hey, everybody wins in that scenario. Whatever's wrong must be pretty serious, though, because Cass doesn't even twitch, just sighs again and stares blankly at a point over Dean's shoulder. Dean, he says eventually, I have become the man. What? Says Dean. He must have misunderstood. The establishment, the corrupt upper management of a systemically evil capitalist bureaucracy. Dean thinks, wildly, that he must somehow be asleep. Not that being asleep necessarily means anything. Cass could just as easily be having an existential crisis in Dean's head instead of in the real world. Then he remembers the last class Sam took. Dissident somethings of something excluded by the dominant public sphere and its blah blah whatever the fuck, and how interested Castiel had been in the required reading. Oh, fuck, he says with a feeling. Cass frowns. This is a serious problem. God didn't leave me to look after things just so I could recreate Zachariah and Michael's hegemony. Okay, says Dean. Because, well, he'd like to get Sam for this one, since it's Sam's fucking fault. It's obviously one of those boyfriend duties Sam lectures him about. First, if you want me to take this seriously, you cannot say shit like hegemony. Cass glares harder, but nods in agreement. Good. Second, you're nothing like those guys. You're not a dick, for starters. Cass slumps and jabs his hands into his pockets. Then why do I feel like one? He asks. Dee kneels in front of Cass's chair and puts his hands on Cass's thighs. Who was it who supported equal representation in the Archangel Council for all the different classes of angel? It wasn't fucking Zachariah, okay? Cass avoids eye contact and shrugs. What good does it do them? All the angels willing to speak out for the new ways of doing things are always outnumbered by the angels who support the status quo. The only changes I've been able to make were because I didn't let anyone argue with my decisions at first. Now I am ineffectual. Well, yeah, Dean says, fishing wildly for a rebuttal. But if you just kept deciding on new ways of doing things and made them all fall in line, you really would be as bad as Michael. You're giving them a chance to figure things out for themselves. Like God, you mean, Cass says. I didn't particularly like God's way of allowing me to choose my own path. It led to pain and suffering for many people before the end. Okay, Dean doesn't have a choice now. He lets the heat he always feels when Cass is around show in his eyes and moves his hands further up Cass's legs. When he has Cass's full attention, he swallows quickly and says, It brought us here, didn't it? Cass narrows his eyes and focuses on Dean's mouth. You're trying to distract me, he says absently. Dean grins. Yeah, it's working too. He reaches up to encourage the swell of Cass's cock starting to push against the fabric of his pants. Cass gives in easily, sitting back with a groan and letting Dean open his fly and pull out his almost full erection. Dean wastes no time sucking the head into his mouth, flying high on the sounds Cass is making above him. He holds Cass down and does all the work, making sure to use lots of tongue, stroking Cass with one hand to make up for the fact that he can't deep throat yet. Cass stares, eyes dark and hungry, and lets Dean have his way at first. Before long, though, Dean is opening his own pants and jacking himself desperately with his free hand while Cass takes over and slides in and out of his mouth, touching his head carefully and directing his movement. The loss of control almost always pushes Dean over the edge, which Cass knows well by now, the bastard. You're going to come like this, aren't you? Cass asks, but it's not a question. come from being fucked like this? Jane squirms in embarrassment and arousal, relaxes his throat more than he's ever managed before, and Cass pushes in further. Give me your hand, Cass says, and pulls Dean's hand from his cock and licks two fingers into his mouth, getting them wet. He pushes the hand away. You know where to put those, he growls, and Dean shudders with anticipation. He reaches down between his legs, Cass watching intently, and touches his saliva-sticky fingers to his hole. Cass stutters in his mouth, a pulse of pre-cum giving away his excitement. Dean grins as much as he can, and then slips both fingers inside, relishing the stretch and slight burn. Yes, Cass says. You love that, don't you? He grips Dean's hair and pulls him closer, cock stretching Dean's mouth even wider. It's perfect and too much, filling him up just right, and Dean tumbles into an orgasm just minutes later, one hand working his dick through the aftershocks and the other cupping his balls, two fingers inside and pressing against his prostate, moaning around Cass's cock in his mouth. Cass doesn't stop, and Dean's not even helping at all anymore. He's too wrung out to object to the pace, and he wouldn't want to anyway. Dean, Cass says roughly, and comes and pulses down Dean's throat. Dean swallows it all and starts participating again, cleaning up the cum that trickles out of his mouth onto Cass and licking until he's pushed away gently. Cass melts into his seat, breathing loudly. He doesn't bring up the subject of hegemonies again. And that, Dean thinks, with justified smugness, as he leans back and wipes a hand over his mouth, grimacing at the mess he left on the carpet, is how you take your boyfriend's mind off his work-related problems. Turns out it's not actually that easy. 3 days after what Dean considers to be his best blowjob to date, he calls Cass to see if he wants to come with Dean and Sam on a quick weekend job they found. He leaves a message, as usual, and doesn't think anything about it again, until he realizes it's Friday afternoon. He hasn't heard from Cass in over 5 days, and if they want to make it back in time for Sam's Monday class, they have to leave now. He tries to shrug off Cass's silence and concentrate on the job. Castiel has more than proven that he can take care of himself, and most anyone else, without breaking a sweat, but Dean still worries. He thinks it's probably coded into his DNA. Sam has him figured out early on during their drive out to the tiny coastal town with a possible gnome infestation. Trouble in gay paradise, he asks. Dean smacks him lightly out of habit. Just haven't heard from Cass in a few days, he says gruffly. He doesn't want to talk about it. He's busy, not a big deal. Sam, bless his giant forehead, takes the goddamn hint for once and doesn't press the issue. Dean focuses on the task at hand for the rest of the weekend, and if he checks his cell phone obsessively for missed calls, well, at least he does it pretty sneakily. Back at home, the week slowly goes by, and when Wednesday rolls around with no word from Cass, Dean starts to get mad. It isn't asking for too much for a text message or something, is it? Just a, hey, not dead and or imprisoned would work. He's not picky. Castiel shows up that night and doesn't seem aware of the fact that he's been in radio silence for over a week. He pops into the living room where Dean is absolutely not watching Oprah reruns on the couch in his underwear and sits down next to Dean with despair. I tried everything, he says glumly. Nothing's going to change without me becoming a dictator. Dean tries not to let his disgruntlement show. Cass is seriously still on this heavenly democracy trip? So that's why you've been AWOL this whole week, he asks, perfectly calm, fuck you very much, playing angelic freedom crusader? Cass looks at Dean as if he hadn't noticed he wasn't alone in the room. A week? He asks in astonishment. I spent a whole week of human time making Raphael read graduate theses on political systems, and I didn't even accomplish anything? Dean tries to strangle his laugh in his throat. Cass doesn't look like he can take any more abuse, but the thought of Raphael sitting in a musty college library reading up on human governments is too much to contemplate, and he snorts loudly, all frustration with Cass's absence gone. You made him read graduate theses, he says, in between wheezes of laughter. Cass glares, mouth set in what would be a pout on anyone else. On him, it's more like a warning sign to evacuate the area before there's an explosion. Not just Raphael, although he made him read the most. I thought if the traditionalists could understand the harmful effects of a stagnant political system that pools all the power into the hands of a small homogeneous group, they might be more open to other ideas. Didn't go like you wanted it to, huh? Cass slumps down, head against the back of the couch. I thought I had carefully chosen all the texts available, but somehow Raphael got hold of a pamphlet promoting Calvinism as a valid form of government, and now he's worse than ever. Dean reaches for a moment. Those are the dudes who think everything's predestined, and no one can change anything because everything is already exactly how it's supposed to be, or it wouldn't be that way in the first place, right? Cass nods, closing his eyes. You don't even want to know how the pamphlet translated that into government. Raphael was one of the angels who promoted Calvinism the first time around, but this particular interpretation was new to him. He looks at Dean. I don't know what to try next. Maybe I should give up. Cass sounds so depressed that Dean wishes he could promise a trip to the arcade or another easy fix, like he used to do with Sam when they were kids, stuck in the same hotel room for weeks with nothing to do. But his best distraction technique for dealing with Castiel has already failed to work as a long-term solution, and what else is he qualified to suggest? Dean tugs Cass over until they're pressed up against each other, Dean's arm around Cass's shoulder, which in no way resembles cuddling, Dean viciously tells his inner Sam, and starts talking out of his ass. That's the thing about free will, though, right? He says. People can have all kinds of shitty ideas, and you can't keep them from disagreeing with you, or you're just as bad as a tyrant. Doesn't matter if you're right if you're still forcing people to think like you. Yes, Cass replies, but angels are not people, and getting an angel to express an opinion that has not been in their minds from the beginning of time is proving to be almost impossible, and I can't quite remember why I thought it was so important in the first place. Because God basically told all the angels to grow the fuck up and follow your example, that's why, Dean says, a proud expression on his face. You're the new Michael. Only not a douchebag. Cass's gloom gets a little lighter, even as he throws Dean a smirk that says he's only tolerating Dean's nonsense because of his cute face. Whatever, Cass can insinuate as much as he wants. Dean knows better. You have all of eternity to get this done, right? Dean continues. You can't expect them all to be awesome as you and get it right away. Give yourself longer than a week before you start thinking you're a failure. Cass frowns. It's been more than 2 years, though, since things first changed in heaven. Yeah, but angels are like old people. It takes them forever to let go of their ways and learn something new. Seriously, don't worry about it until it's been 5 years. Dean can tell Cass wants to yell at him for disparaging the elderly, so he pulls an excellent move, in his experienced opinion, and straddles Cass on a couch before Cass can protest or respond. Cass can't resist kissing, and Dean uses that knowledge like a weapon. Cass gives in for a while, tugging Dean firmly down onto his lap, and kissing back with fervor, hands roaming over Dean's naked spine and hips. Then he pulls away and gives Dean the evil eye. What? Dean asks innocently. I'm letting it go for now because your opinion made sense, not because you keep trying to distract me with your mouth, Cass says firmly. I'm not having sex with you unless you understand that. Dean rolls his eyes. Sure, I got it. Distraction techniques are unnecessary, he says, licking up Cass's neck slowly. But you have to admit, they are still fun. After an hour of really excellent couch sex, Castiel is forced to agree with him. For a while, it seems like Cass is dealing with his being in charge of everything angst pretty well, and that means mostly where Dean doesn't have to listen to it. Then Sam gets involved. Of fucking course. Dean gets home one evening to find them deep in conversation, in the kitchen of all places. None of them had even read the Communist Manifesto? Sam is saying incredulously. Angels have never needed to know how to do anything but obey orders before now, Cass replies, shaking his head. And even if any of them were inclined to study political science, I doubt that Marx would have been their first choice. He's not hierarchical enough. Oh my God, Dean complains, putting the six-pack he'd picked up on the way home from work into the fridge. Sam, don't encourage him. Sam and Cass both turn and give Dean identical bitchy faces. He struggles not to find it incredibly adorable. This has serious repercussions, Dean, Sam lectures. The future of heaven is at stake. Oh yeah, Dean replies. Right now your future is at stake. I still haven't forgiven you for letting him read that stupid course packet with all the dissident voices nonsense. Sam smirks. That reminds me, Cass, I brought back a copy of that book you asked for yesterday. Cass brightens as Sam pulls a book the size of Dean's head from his bag and lays it on the table. Dean cranes his neck to read the title, something like On Historical and Political Knowing, which is as douchey of a title as he would have expected. He sits down at the table to supervise what's sure to be a disaster, which he'll end up being blamed for somehow. Thank you, Cass tells Sam, picking up the book and opening the cover. This is the text for next week's assignment. Assignment? Dean asks. What, you're giving out angelic homework regularly now? Sam suggested it, Cass replies, and Sam sticks his tongue out at Dean. Everyone reads the same book or article each week and then writes a paper discussing it and shares the paper with everyone else. I figured it might jumpstart some real conversation, Sam says. Then maybe Cass can get some of them to stop being such assholes about the more archaic rules he wants to phase out. Dean figures it's not actually that bad of an idea. As long as I don't have to read any of it, he mutters, getting up to call out for dinner. Sam and Cass barely notice, too caught up in planning Cass's little angel school. Dean supposes he should have just handed this off to Sam at the beginning, and he spends the evening trying to shrug off vague feelings of uselessness. When he and Cass say goodnight to Sam and stumble into Dean's bedroom, Cass calls him on it. Sam's idea may have been very helpful, Cass begins, but you are helpful in your own way, too. Dean leers. Yeah, I know what I'm good for, he says. As a joke, it falls flat. Cass grabs his shoulder and swings him around to lean against the closed bedroom door. You are everything, Dean, and you should know that, he says fiercely. The tiny knot of apprehension in Dean's throat smooths away immediately, and he coughs to hide his far too mushy reaction. I would not be here if not for you, Cass continues. I would not even have a heaven to worry about, or the knowledge that this is the right thing to do. Dean relaxes against Cass, his hands coming up to play with Cass's waistband. Yeah, I know, he says. I do know that. Good. Cass lets the intensity in his eyes change into arousal, and Dean meets him halfway for a long, deep kiss as they move toward the bed. As much as the finality of his relationship with Cass scares him sometimes, he wouldn't give it up for anything. Cass spends more time in heaven than usual during the next couple of months, getting his new program into place. Dean uses the extra alone time to build up an impressive knowledge of Dr. Sexy Trivia, whenever Sam's not there to tease him about it. And, well, he also takes a few solo hunting trips. Cass talks about it constantly, which Dean doesn't really mind all that much, since the stories Cass tells usually feature Raphael getting schooled in increasingly hilarious ways. Progress has been slow, but Cass is optimistic about the future, and much happier because of it. Dean does draw the line at some things, however. I am not touching you until you put that essay down, Dean says. I'm almost done, Cass replies, not looking away from the paper he's holding as he lounges on the bed on his side, distractingly naked. Just grope me for a while, I don't mind. Dean rolls his eyes. Yeah, that sounds really hot. It's not my fault you forgot to finish the reading for this week, he says from his position on the bed, kneeling behind Cass. He pokes Cass's hip, hard. I shouldn't be punished for something I didn't do. Cass sighs melodramatically. It still sometimes surprises Dean when he does that, and looks over his shoulder at Dean. Tell you what, Cass says, with a devious little smile. If you can convince me to postpone my reading using your mouth and nothing else, and I don't mean with words, then I'll put it away and you can fuck me. Dean almost laughs, but hearing Cass say things like fuck me is still an instant turn-on, and it comes out more like a groan. Cass goes back to reading the paper. You can start any time, he says. God, you're annoying, Dean says fondly, and scoots down to do his best. 10 minutes of judicious rimming with a side order of sucking later, Dean smirks triumphantly as Cass moans and drops the paper to the floor. Dean's mouth is clearly awesome. The end. 3 times Sam Winchester acted like a saint, and 1 time he didn't have to. Written and read by X-Man-Hater. Summary. Sam would like his gravestone to say something like, Here lies Samuel Winchester, who made some mistakes, but still shouldered his brother's gay, blasphemous relationship, strike that, burden, bravely, and without much complaint. Dean and Cass mostly fight about stupid shit, Sam discovers. There's usually some underlying issue behind their arguments, but the fighting itself is almost all about trivial things. They're both stubborn bastards, and Sam privately thinks they enjoy fighting. Not to mention they've gotten secure enough with each other for Dean to not assume that every argument is a sign of an impending breakup, which naturally leads to pettiness. Dean pushes the hardest against people he trusts to still love him anyway. Not that Sam would take his life in his hands by actually saying that out loud in front of Dean. It's true, though, and Sam thinks Castiel is starting to understand that. Sam also knows that, given the choice, Dean will always stick with the hardest possible way of doing something. Live without Sam, or go to hell. Stick with a ready-made family and a normal life, or hunt monsters with Sam and sleep with an archangel. Sam's not really complaining, since most of Dean's choices have turned out to be okay for them all, but he does wish every now and then that Dean would just be grateful for the way things are and stop trying to mess it all up. Sam also wishes for world peace and a hair product that actually works as advertised, so he's used to the impossibility of his hopes. 1. Sam sometimes has trouble with the reality of what his life has become. It's a shock to go from saving the world through a noble self-sacrifice to attending grad school and refereeing his brother's petty relationship problems with a dude, who just happens to be the most powerful angel in heaven. "Why are you asking me?" Sam stares in utter confusion at Dean and Castiel, who both look back with exasperation, as if he's the one who's acting strangely. "I don't have to sleep on it," he continues. "Dean, you do get how weird it is to have your brother decide what kind of bed you buy, don't you?" Dean shakes his head. "Well, we can't agree on anything other than having you be the tiebreaker, so deal with it. Come on, hard or soft?" Sam can usually depend on Castiel to rise above these things, but he can see today is going to be different when he takes in the stubborn set of Cass's jaw. Dean's mulish expression is nothing new, at least. He tries to buy some time. "Arguments for and against? Cass, you first," he says. Castiel straightens up and gets that holy and pedantic look that usually means he's about to side with Sam in an argument. Sam's a little worried about having it directed at him instead of Dean, even though he doesn't have a real stake in this particular issue. "First of all," Castiel begins, "a firm mattress is the best possible support for the human spine." "Fuck that," Dean interrupts. "I've been sleeping on hard, nasty mattresses my whole life. If I'm gonna actually buy one, I want it to be so soft I have trouble getting out of it every morning." Sam glares. "It's Cass's turn to talk, dipshit. Don't make this harder than it has to be." Castiel seems to have lost some of his fervor, but he keeps going. "Having a firm mattress will provide better leverage for at least 5 different sexual positions." This makes Dean pause, a thoughtful look on his face, and Sam sighs. Why do they always bring it back to their sex life? He now knows more about gay sex than any straight guy he's ever met. "And thirdly," Castiel says, like he's quoting material from an informational pamphlet, "a soft mattress has a 40% shorter lifespan than a firm one, according to many studies, making it an unwise investment." "Anything else?" Sam asks Cass, when it looks like he won't continue. "Those are the main 3 reasons," Cass replies. "Dean can make his flimsy attempts at an argument now." "I'm really going to regret teaching you passive aggression, aren't I?" mutters Dean. Sam agrees with that wholeheartedly, but he turns to Dean and motions for him to make his case. "I already said it," Dean shrugs. "If I'm selling out and becoming a domesticated person, I damn well better get the most comfortable bed I can out of it. I don't care what's best for my spine. I want to think I'm sleeping on a feather bed in heaven every night." "Your continued disregard for your health is Castiel practically sputters, which is rare enough for Sam to wish he had a tape recorder. "A travesty," Cass continues. "And your continued disregard for the fact that I'm a grown-ass man is what?" Dean shoots back. "Attractive and reasonable?" Sam wishes fervently that he had been an only child and steps in between Dean and Cass, who are having an epic steering contest, minus the usual sexual tension and plus actual aggression. "Look," Sam says, having a very well-timed stroke of genius, "why don't you just get one of those pillow-top things? It'll be firm, so everyone's spine will be healthy, with a nice soft layer on top, so Dean can sleep in luxury." Dean looks like he's going to be ornery and dismiss the suggestion, but Castiel looks intrigued. "The website said nothing about pillow-tops," he says. It sounds like a reasonable solution, but I reserve the right to change my mind after testing one. Sam turns to Dean, hoping he'll take Castiel's willingness to compromise as a good thing and relent as well. Dean glares at Sam and Cass for a minute, then sighs and drops his folded arms down to his sides, relaxing. "Fine," he says. "We'll go look at some and see if we can find one we like." Sam feels overwhelming relief at this fairly quick resolution to a ridiculous argument. He's going to refer to this as the Great Mattress War of 2012, he decides, just to piss Dean off. The relief turns suddenly into despair at Dean's next declaration. "And Sam can come along to make sure we don't fight about it." With that, Dean and Cass are back to normal, and Sam tries to keep positive. At least they aren't making him choose their sheets. And he just earned enough awesome brother points that Dean won't be able to weasel his way out of going to that art gallery Sam has been meaning to check out. 2. Sam thoroughly enjoys the PDA battle. It's never over, but sometimes there's a clear frontrunner who claims a temporary victory. He likes it best when Cass is in the lead, because a frustrated and embarrassed Dean is Sam's favorite kind of brother. But seeing Castiel's humanity as pissing me off face is also pretty priceless. It's the latter today when Dean drags Sam and Cass out to a local MMA fight. He loves to sit back and keep track of how easily he could beat the fighters, or how long they would last in a fight against a werewolf or a wendigo. Sam has to admit it's funny to watch, so he doesn't protest, and Cass just wants to be with Dean after having been away dealing with some sort of Cupid problem for a few weeks. But it's a room full of macho people bent on destruction and testosterone, which means Dean is doing his best to fit in. Sam suspects that even if Cass had a female vessel, Dean wouldn't be up for handholding in this particular venue. Castiel doesn't see things that way, clearly. Dean shrugs Castiel's hand off his shoulder for the fifth time that night. "Hands off!" he barks, and Cass glares. "This is ridiculous," Cass complains. "I could level this whole building in 10 seconds. I don't understand why you're afraid to let anyone see me touch you." It's just not okay right now," Dean says helplessly. "I know you could beat up everyone here, but maybe I just want to have a nice night out without any homophobia, or the need to have my boyfriend defend my non-existent honor, okay?" He looks over at a group of men sitting across the room watching the fight. Sam follows his gaze and sees why Dean is being so difficult. The group doesn't look very friendly, and they're all fairly big guys. "I haven't been able to touch you for almost a month," Castiel says. "Whose fault is that?" Dean shoots back, and Sam winces. Now it's not just an argument about public displays of affection. It's also a fight about how often Cass has to go back to heaven. Luckily, Castiel ignores Dean's words. "If you won't let me even touch your shoulder or hold your hand here, I'm going to take you to a place where I can do much more than that." Dean turns a little red, and Sam pointedly ignores the way his eyes light up. "Can't wait till the fight's over?" Dean asks, kind of breathlessly. Cass glowers, and Sam really doesn't want to know why that seems to make Dean even happier. "You're lucky I haven't already started undressing you," Cass growls, and Dean's eyes get even wider. So not to interrupt or anything," Sam says, out of self-defense. "But maybe you should go now? I'll drive the car home." "Thank you, Sam," Cass says, eyes not leaving Dean's face. "We do have a few things to discuss in private." He hauls Dean up and starts for the door, pausing only to let Dean quickly toss the car keys to Sam. Sam nods at Dean's grateful expression, which is soon gone, dragged away by Cass as he herds Dean from the room. Sam is just glad he didn't disappear in plain sight. One of the men Dean had been trying to avoid attracting any notice from earlier approaches Sam as he's settling back into his seat, determined to let Dean and Cass have enough time to work out their current spat. The guy is huge, as tall as Sam and probably twice as thick around the body and shoulders. Sam starts getting into the headspace for a fight, because if this dude starts in on the gay jokes, Sam is not holding back. "Your friends didn't have to leave," the man says in a pleasant voice. Sam jerks in reaction to what he'd been expecting to hear, and then the actual words sink in. What? He says. "Your friends," the man repeats. "The guys who were together?" The one looked like he was expecting a gay bashing any minute, but we're not like that. "Oh," Sam says. feeling ashamed that he'd pretty much assumed the same thing Dean had. "Well, thanks. I'll tell Dean later. They had some stuff to work out anyway, that didn't really have anything to do with you guys." The man nods. "Yeah, I could see that." He sticks his hand out and Sam takes it, still in a little shock. "Name's Lloyd," he says. "Seen you here a few times, and if you guys are going to be regulars, I think it's time we got to know each other, since my brother owns this place." "Sam," Sam replies faintly. That's really nice of you." "Don't want anyone thinking we're some kind of bigots here," Lloyd continues. "Andrew would never forgive us if his admirers stopped coming to his fights." He indicates a man standing to the side of the ring, dressed for a fight and waiting his turn. "He says he gets more ass here than in the gay bars." Sam can't help it, he really can't. He lets a snort of laughter escape, and soon he's trying not to laugh so hard that he cries. Lloyd gives him a look, one that says he's not so sure of Sam's mental health, and Sam pulls it together. "I'm sorry," he says. "It's just my brother, Dean, the one who is so worried about getting hassled." Lloyd nods. "Well, he's kind of anti-public displays of affection, and his boyfriend doesn't even notice when other people are around, usually. So Dean spends a lot of his time fending off hugs and more in front of people, and I think he's going to be pissed that he doesn't have a reason to avoid them here anymore, once I tell him you guys are cool." "He's your older brother, huh?" Lloyd asks, without making it much of a question. Sam nods. "Yeah, I know that look. My brother always makes it just before he completely humiliates me in front of my wife." Sam smiles and shrugs. Dean completely deserves it this time. "Well," he says, "I think I better get going. It was nice to meet you, Lloyd. I'm sure I'll see you around." Lloyd shakes his hand again in farewell, and Sam leaves, mentally preparing for the fun of swinging the PDA fight back into Castiel's favor. All the joy the thought brings him disappears as soon as he opens the door of their apartment. Sam trips over Castiel's trench coat in the entryway, and then something he thinks are Dean's shoes in the hallway to the living room. When he looks up after nearly falling over, he sees Dean bent over the side of the couch, and Sam's brain mercifully starts up a refrain of la, la, la that covers up any other audio-visual input he's getting, and he shuts his eyes tightly. "The couch counts as a common possession, Dean," he yells wearily, because they've had this conversation a million times. He'd even made a few stops on his way home, not wanting to get back too early, and there was no good reason for Dean to have decided to desecrate the couch. Again. "Shit," he hears Dean say. Moan is more accurate, but Sam loves himself enough to never use that word in connection with Dean, in the privacy of his own mind. And then he feels the slight displacement in the air that means Castiel has probably zapped himself and Dean into Dean's room. Sam opens one eye cautiously, and when he doesn't see anyone, starts down the hall to the bedrooms, carefully avoiding the couch with its rumpled cushions and mysterious wet spot. He toys with the idea of banging on the door and making Dean apologize, and then telling him that all his paranoia had been for nothing, but ends up just going to his room. Happy as he is that Cass and Dean have made up, he doesn't want another eyeful of anyone's naked body. Besides, he's earned so many awesome brother points tonight, and he really should think about how to cash them in. 3. The first time Castiel chooses Sam's favorite vegetarian restaurant instead of his usual, a pizzeria with Dean's favorite type of crust, when it's his turn to pick Friday night dinner, Sam assumes it's part of some power struggle he wants nothing to do with and ignores it. The next time he's slightly suspicious. The third time is when Dean catches on, and when Cass admits his ultimate goal, Sam tries to make himself as unobtrusive as possible in order to watch the fireworks. "What?" Dean says flatly. His hand, which had been resting lightly on the booth behind Castiel's shoulders, drops to his lap, and he turns to face Cass with a closed-off expression that means nothing good is about to happen. "Your diet is extremely unhealthy," Cass says again, sounding like he doesn't understand why Dean's upset. They all know he does, though. The clueless angel act is pretty much all act these days. "I can't just keep cleaning out your arteries every time you're about to have a heart attack." "You cleaned out my arteries?" Dean's voice is low and angry. "So free will only matters when you're not the one in charge, is that it?" Castiel shifts and fixes his steady gaze on Dean. "I only step in when you refuse to take care of yourself. I know you can, but you so often won't." It's still my decision, Dean snaps. I've been around a while. I can make my own choices. So you choose to have me watch you suffer and let me do nothing to help you? Castiel asks. Dean stays quiet, and Sam starts to feel uncomfortably voyeuristic. Guys, he says. They ignore him. I want you to live as long as you can, Cass murmurs, hand sliding over Dean's shoulder and pressing gently. I want this life with you as long as I can have it. Dean ducks his head and his face turns pink. You can't say shit like that, he protests. Not in front of Sam. Sam agrees, and he's about to get up and offer to leave when Cass reaches out and touches Dean's forehead. Just before they disappear, Sam hears Cass say they'll be at home. Sam decides to stay out late, because he's an awesome brother, and by the time he gets back, the patch of space underneath Dean's bedroom door is dark, and he can't hear anything except the tick of the kitchen clock. The next morning, when Sam stumbles out of his room, intent on following the smell of pancakes to its source, Dean is sitting at the kitchen table watching Castiel magic up breakfast. They've clearly kissed and made up, and Dean smiles when he sees Sam. Hey, sleeping ugly, he says. Sam tries to make a dignified retort, but only manages to say, coffee? In a plaintive tone as he collapses in the chair opposite Dean. Castiel soon joins them, and Dean doesn't protest the extra-large helping of fruit on his plate. Later, when his brain is working again, Sam will tease Dean about makeup sex with his overprotective angel boyfriend, and Dean will call him a princess, and Cass will watch them both with amusement, and then suggest Dean's favorite burgers for lunch. Right now, though, Sam is just thankful that he escaped this fight without seeing any naked bodies. 1. When Castiel shows up with a latte, extra hot with peppermint, while Sam is studying for a final, Sam is confused but pleased. When Dean offers to let Sam take the Impala to this bookstore across town that he's been meaning to go to forever, he's surprised, but he doesn't say no. He is definitely happy about the fact that he hasn't walked in on any naked shenanigans in shared spaces lately. But some things are just too strange to let go. Okay, Sam finally says one morning, as Castiel provides another perfect latte and Dean serves a healthy breakfast. Seriously, what the hell is going on? Do I need to call Bobby? Have you been replaced by Stepford aliens? A guy can't even make breakfast for his own brother without accusations, Dean asks, faking a wounded expression. Castiel looks over Sam's shoulder instead of directly at him, avoiding the need to answer. Come on, Sam scoffs at them both. I'm not stupid. I'm grateful for the recent lack of embarrassing situations where I see way, way more of both of you than I ever wanted, but I am not stupid. Dean twitches and sighs, hands moving restlessly on the surface of the table. Yeah, about that, he starts to say. We are sorry for the frequency with which you seem to be traumatized by our relationship, Cass says smoothly, cutting Dean off with a hand on his shoulder. We are grateful and thankful for all the ways in which you help us out. Sam wonders how hard Castiel had to argue to get Dean to agree to this, and doesn't say anything for a minute or two. Then Dean and Cass exchange one of those looks that Sam calls their old married couple routine, and to be honest, it kind of creeps him out sometimes. Dean breaks the connection and sighs again, rolling his eyes at Cass. Thank you, Sam, Dean turns to tell Sam with a sharp bite of sarcasm. I'm so glad you get along with my boyfriend. You're welcome, Sam says, because sarcasm or not, Dean clearly means it. Sam gets up and gives Dean a squeeze around the shoulders and nods at Castiel. Are we done with the goddamn hugging? Dean grumbles into his coffee. Castiel tries to hide his smile, but doesn't quite succeed, and Dean kicks him in the shins. Some boyfriend you are, laughing at my pain. I will make it worth your while, Dean, Cass says, tugging Dean up from the table. And just like that, Sam is back in the real world, where he knows enough about Dean and Castiel's relationship to be their therapist. Sam hides a smile of his own as he leans against the counter and sips his still-perfectly-hot latte, while watching Dean and Cass grope each other on their way out of the kitchen. It was nice while it lasted. This doesn't mean Sam won't tease Dean about the whole thing mercilessly later on. He's not actually a saint. The end. White Picket Fences, written and read by X-Man Hater. Summary. In which Dean swears he's not really a Yenta, Castiel goes along with it for the sake of marital harmony, and Sam gets the last laugh. "We really need to find Sam a girlfriend," Dean says, and then immediately wishes he hadn't when Castiel responds by letting go of his cock. "Is that really what you want to think about while I'm blowing you?" Cass asks with definite displeasure. He shifts backwards on his heels, shoving Dean away, and Dean misses the contact immediately. "God, no," Dean says in protest. "I'm sorry. Just forget I said anything." Cass ignores him, tucks him back into his jeans, and climbs onto the bed with Dean. "Oh, no," Castiel says solemnly. "This is serious. I can't think about Sam in this kind of situation anyway. I might decide I chose the wrong Winchester." Dean punches Cass lightly on the shoulder and winces when his knuckles hit what feels like solid rock. He gives Cass a wounded glare. Normally, by the time Dean actually touches Cass, he's already relaxed his body enough to prevent that from happening. "You deserved it," Castiel says without mercy. Dean flops back onto the bed and Cass follows with much more grace. "It's not like my perfect domestic bliss makes me think everyone in the world needs to settle down with a picket fence and a dog," Dean says. Castiel looks at him curiously. "Sarcasm," Dean answers the silent question. Cass just arches an eyebrow at him, and Dean relents. "Fine, I give up. I'm totally domesticated. Fuck you very much." Cass rubs a hand up and down Dean's back. "You love it," he accuses. "Whatever," Dean says, struggling to keep some shred of his dignity intact. "The point is, Sam's lonely, even with you to geek out with every now and then, and me." "He doesn't seem particularly lonely," Cass replies. "Not like I never see people lonely," Dean explains. "It's more like I never get laid and I'm cranky lonely, with some I'm still waiting for my fairy tale princess to come rescue me lonely on the side. Or maybe I nearly destroyed the world and then saved it and no one but my brother and a bunch of angels and demons will ever know about it lonely," Castiel suggests. Dean looks up sharply, almost hitting Cass's jaw. "Man, I didn't want to get that emo about it," he says. "Let's just find the guy a date for starters. We can worry about the future later." And isn't that a luxury, Dean thinks, but doesn't say. For the first time in their lives, Sam and Dean don't have to worry about what horrible world-ending thing might be lurking around the next corner. Well, not much, anyway. Cass stares at Dean like he heard that whole thought process, but Dean's pretty sure he just does that to make Dean nervous. "Anyway," Dean says, "you were doing something pretty important earlier." He trails off with a leer at Cass and spreads his legs, turning on his back. "Dean Winchester," Cass says, as his hands start reaching for very interested parts of Dean's body. "You are the most shameless sex addict I've ever seen." Dean gasps as his erection comes back almost instantly, but manages to smirk at Cass. "You love it," he says. Cass doesn't argue the point. Dean's determined to do this the human way, so he vetoes almost all of Castiel's suggestions, which mainly consist of Cass soul-gazing, or whatever he calls it, at every person he sees until he finds Sam's perfect match. "No," Dean says for the third time, "that's cheating. I'm good with people. Just you wait and see. I can find Sam a girl without any strange angel mojo." Castiel just says, "Okay," in his "I'm being supportive and mature so you look like a child" voice, and flops off to argue with Raphael about Nietzsche or Cupids or whatever the hell the latest problem is in heaven. Which, yeah, pisses Dean off, but if he shows that, he automatically loses. He resolves to be exceptionally smug once he manages to do this all on his own. Of course, Sam had been very clear about Dean's interference the last time he tried to help out, when Sam had come back to the motel room to find what he called a suspiciously chipper hooker holding a pair of handcuffs. Dean still maintains that Sam was just whiny, because that woman had been hot. But that's not important. The point is, Dean's grown as a person, and he's going to do a better job this time. 3 days later, though, Dean hasn't even found a one-night stand for Sam, much less a steady girlfriend. He's still not ready to give in, so he decides that he might as well figure out what kind of girl Sam wants. He's pretty sure Sam's type hasn't changed much since middle school, the Ruby aberration aside, but it never hurts to check. The tricky part will be digging around without Sam figuring out why. Dean corners Sam in the living room the next evening they both have off from work and school. It takes a while, but he manages to steer the conversation to the topic of women and dating. It's going very well. A little too well, apparently, since Sam is beginning to look at him with worry. "Dude," Sam says finally, breaking in during Dean's riveting tale of a night with a sex toy box bigger than the trunk of the Impala and the most flexible woman he'd ever met. "I thought you got the whole gay panic thing out of your system already." "What?" Dean asks, kind of dumbfounded. "Of course I'm over that. Have you forgotten the last 3 years of my incredibly gay life?" Sam rolls his eyes. "Unfortunately, no," he says, shuddering a little, Dean presumes, at all the gay he's been forced to witness. "Then what the fuck are you talking about?" Dean asks belligerently. "What are you talking about? You've spent the last 10 minutes drooling over women and telling me all about all the chicks you used to pull," Sam replies. Dean opens and then shuts his mouth. Okay, so the conversation probably did sound like he was having a hetero flashback if you weren't in Dean's head, where the thought process went, talk about women and see which anecdotes interest Sam the most. And yeah, he still liked women, still found himself attracted to people he met. He's in a relationship, not dead. But the thought of cheating on Castiel with anyone makes him sick. He's sure that even if he wanted to, he wouldn't, because who would be stupid enough to cheat on an archangel? Not Dean, no matter what Sam might think. And he doesn't want to, which means it didn't even occur to him that Sam might misconstrue his trip down memory lane. "No, fuck no," Dean says quickly. "I just thought maybe you needed some encouragement to talk about dating again, you know." Sam smiles. "You want to talk about girls and relationships with me?" he asks. "Are you okay with the emotional maturity something like that implies?" Dean cuffs him in the back of the head. "Fucking jerk. See if I ask you again." "Seriously, though," Sam replies. "Thanks. It's nice of you to ask, but I'm really not interested in getting back into that right now." "Your biological clock's ticking away in there somewhere," Dean says. "You don't want to wait too long or it'll explode." Sam gives him a look. "Ha, ha." With no new information and an inability to explain to women that he really is asking them out for his brother and not himself, Dean seems to hit a brick wall in his quest to help Sam find his own version of a white picket fence. He's not going to give up, though, no matter what Castiel says. His fucking honor is at stake, okay? It doesn't help that the conversations he's had with several women have left him with the burning emotional need to be as gay as possible for as long as possible, preferably in front of an audience, but not in a kinky way, just in an I-have-witnesses-that-will-swear-I-really-am-gay kind of way. Castiel benefits from this situation, and finds it all intensely amusing, of course. "I'm serious," Dean whines to Cass one afternoon, after getting back from a fruitless trip to a local indie bookstore, looking for a hipster girlfriend for Sam. "Do I have a sign on my forehead that tells women to try and cure me of homosexuality?" Castiel just pulls Dean down onto the couch and settles him into a position that lets him claim plausible deniability when it comes to cuddling, while also being really fucking comfortable. Dean sinks back into Castiel's embrace. "It's not like I'm actually gay in the first place," Dean grumbles. "But if I'm honest about being bi, they just think I'm asking for a threesome." Castiel shifts and starts rubbing Dean's neck absently. "Perhaps you're going about this the wrong way," he starts to say, and Dean doesn't let him finish. "I fucking told you, I'm not letting you cheat." Cass squeezes his neck more roughly for a moment. "I meant," he says, "that you should have Sam with you when you try to introduce him to women, instead of just talking him up as if he's your imaginary boyfriend." Dean sits up straight. "Like a blind date, only not as totally stupid." "Exactly," Castiel replies. "There is a girl who works at the library who might be interested." "Did you soul gaze at her?" Dean asks suspiciously. Castiel huffs an amused laugh. "No, I don't know anything about her that she hasn't told me herself, verbally." "Awesome," says Dean. "So we've just got to get them both to the same restaurant at the same time, and maybe make sure Sam's had a beer or two and we're golden." It seems perfect, but then Dean has a sudden thought. "Wait, she's hot, right?" he asks Castiel. "Sam's not me or anything, but he's not too ugly." Castiel frowns at him. "She is a very intelligent woman," he starts, and Dean interrupts because he's a douchebag like that when he wants to be. Wait, you don't have a crush on her, do you? He asks grouchily. How do you even know this girl? Castiel smiles predatorily at him, pushes him into a supine position on the couch, and uses one hand to hold him down while kissing the fuck out of him. Dean's slightly lightheaded when Cass finally lets him up for air. Right, Dean pants. No more stupid questions. He gives Cass a hopeful look, which is supposed to mean, more kissing, please, but Castiel keeps him at an arm's length. I met Hannah at the library when I was looking for some Neela's texts, Castiel explains. She was very helpful, and we got to talking once I found the books I was looking for. I told her I was in a relationship already with a man. Dude, Dean protests. I know you weren't scamming on her. You don't have to... Wait, are you seriously going to let Raphael read about Neelism? No, I wanted to find the text in order to keep Raphael from getting to them first, Castiel replies. And Dean heaves a sigh of relief. Raphael doesn't need that kind of encouragement. Not if Dean ever wants to see his boyfriend outside of dream visitations again. He lets Castiel go find Hannah, confident that he can talk Sam into a bar outing later in the evening, and everything goes according to plan at first. Sam had been kind of confused when Castiel showed up at the bar with a friend in tow, but he didn't let it get to him. Hannah is pretty in a sort of unusual way, since her features are a little too strong to be conventionally attractive, but Sam seems to like that. She's clearly very smart, and she and Sam start arguing about politics and music and art almost right away. She's loud and opinionated and doesn't give an inch when she thinks she's right. Dean thinks to himself that Castiel has pretty good taste in women. Dean nudges Castiel somewhere around the fourth round of beer. Sam and Hannah have already sort of created their own little circle of conversation, and Dean and Cass are mostly just talking to each other, or not at all. Castiel raises an eyebrow in question, and Dean grins. Good work, he leans over to say into Castiel's ear since it's loud in the bar. They're really hitting it off. Castiel settles more firmly into his seat with a proud look, and Dean sort of wants to drag him home for celebratory blowjobs, but first he's got to make sure Sam's good to go on his own from here. He gets his chance when Hannah leaves for a bathroom trip. He smirks at Sam and waggles his eyebrows. You and Hannah, huh? That's when it all goes to shit. Sam wrinkles his forehead and looks confused for a second, and then he laughs, hard. You are the worst gay person ever, Dean, he gasps. Weren't you listening to our conversation at all? Dean frowns. Yeah, I think I caught the important bits. You know, like how well you're getting along with her. Sam shakes his head, still chuckling. She's gay, smartass, he says. That's sort of why we were talking about gay marriage, and how her girlfriend thought any kind of marriage was capitulating to heteronormativity, but she didn't agree and that's why they broke up. Is any of this ringing a bell? Dean slumps back against the booth. Then he remembers whose fault this really is and turns to Cass. You, he growls. What the fuck? Why'd you find Sam a lesbian girlfriend? Castiel looks sheepish. You didn't want me to read her soul, he says. I didn't know. You couldn't tell? Dean asks, conveniently forgetting that he hadn't noticed anything either. Sam hasn't forgotten, though. Damn him. I think it's safe to say that neither of you owns a functioning gaydar, Sam says. Hannah's really great, and she'll be a cool friend, but you two need to work on being more involved in the queer community. Don't lecture me about being gay, Dean growls, or I'll have Castiel mind-whammy you. I won't mind-whammy anyone, Castiel says stubbornly, just like every other time Dean's tried that threat. Sam sticks his tongue out at Dean. Fine, Dean spits out. We'll just be really, really gay then. Like, in the living room. On the couch. Loudly, obnoxiously gay. Of course, that's when Hannah gets back. She makes a little amused face and settles back into her seat. I can be loudly and obnoxiously gay, she offers. If there are any hot women around, that is. Sam smiles, and even though the matchmaking was a serious failure, Dean has to admit that the night hasn't been a total loss. Sam hasn't laughed that much in a while. The second date they set Sam up for, well, Dean refuses to ever discuss anything that had happened that night again, and tells Castiel that if he brings any of it up, he's never fucking Dean again. He means it, and considering how much Dean enjoys getting fucked, that is saying something. Sam, luckily, doesn't seem to remember anything other than getting totally wasted. The third not really a blind date is carefully calculated to appeal to all of Sam's interests and preferences. Dean feels like a martyr when the first strands of cuddly college emo music, otherwise known as shit in Dean's lexicon, fill the air in the coffee shop. The guy on the stage has an appalling haircut. No one's drinking alcohol. Castiel is looking like he's actually enjoying himself, and Dean wants to find something to gank. He takes a deep breath and focuses on Sam, sitting on the other side of their little table and unaware that he's being set up. This is for Sam, Dean thinks. He can do this. He's pretty sure Sam will like Amy. Dean likes her anyway, especially since she knows almost as much about cars as he does. They met when she needed someone to show her some advanced tricks for classic Chevrolets, and a friend of hers referred her to Dean's garage. As soon as he saw what a great job she'd done with her first-generation Monte Carlo, he'd been determined to set her up with Sam, since he couldn't have her himself. Luckily for Dean, she'd taken one look at him and said flat out that she wasn't interested. Apparently he'd been drooling over her mechanical skills a little too obviously. Once he mentioned Cass, she relaxed, and they'd fallen into an easy friendship. She doesn't know it's a setup either, which Dean feels kind of guilty about, but he figures that even if she and Sam don't hit it off the way he hopes, they'll probably both still enjoy the night. Amy's one flaw, as far as Dean is concerned, is that she loves the singer-songwriter bullshit. Hey, he says when Amy arrives. Amy, this is my brother Sam, and you know Cass. Hi, Sam, she says, sitting in the empty seat next to him. Sam gives Dean a knowing look, but doesn't protest. Hi, he says. So, how do you know Dean? They make small talk, and Dean feels like it's going well, but when Amy gets up for a coffee refill, Sam glares at him. She's really cool, but it's not going to happen, Sam says firmly. Castiel makes a concerned face at Dean, and God, he really needs to get over this matchmaking crap if Cass is all worried about him. You sure? He asks Sam, just in case. Yes, Sam replies. I'm just not ready, okay? Dean sighs. Yeah, it's okay. He suffers through the rest of the music, and when they leave, Amy pulls him aside for a second. He's not really my type, she says, kind of apologetically. Dean smiles ruefully. Well, apparently he's not ready for dating yet, so that's good. Sorry I dragged you out here for this. Amy laughs at him. I had a good time. Don't worry about it. That makes him feel a little better, and when they get home, he tells Sam to put on some loud music and drags an unresisting Castiel to his room. If he's going to be a failure, he's at least going to be a failure who has lots of sex. Dean thinks Sam might have gone gay for about 5 minutes, and then shakes his head in disgust when he starts trying to remember which of the gay guys he knows is currently single. What is wrong with him? Dean admits defeat finally, and Castiel's attempts at cheering him up don't really do much. Dean would sort of like to rewind the last few months and avoid getting this involved in finding Sam a girl to start with, because then maybe he'd feel like less of a failure. You're not a failure, Castiel insists. You did more for Sam than most brothers would do, and it's not your fault that none of the dates worked out. Dean grimaces. Yeah, sure. He and Cass are waiting at a bar for Sam on a Friday night. It's usually a good time, relaxing at the end of the week, especially when Cass can make it as well. Dean's not really feeling it tonight, though. I guess we're going to have to do it your way, he tells Cass, but Cass just shakes his head. No, I think you were right at the beginning, Cass says. We just need to wait for it to happen in a natural way. No interference of angelic or human origin. Dean frowns again. I guess. Dean, Cass says, in the voice he reserves for when Dean needs to be reminded of something important, and reaches over to lift Dean's face to meet his gaze. Sam is lucky to have you, and so am I. Dean flushes, predictably, and hides his smile. Shut up, he tells Cass, and leans his shoulder against Castiel's warm side. Sam joins them soon, and they order their food. Sam and Cass talk about one of Sam's classes, and Dean tunes them out for the most part, until a vaguely familiar voice says Sam's name. Dean watches Sam turn to the woman who'd just walked over to their booth. Sarah? Sam asks, sounding as confused as Dean feels. You remembered, Sarah says, and then Dean realizes why she looks so familiar. She's Sarah Blake, the woman who'd helped them with that haunted painting so long ago. Yeah, Sam says, still sounding dazed. It's really good to see you. You look great. Thanks, Sarah replies, pushing a strand of dark hair behind her ear. You do too. Sam remembers Dean and Cass then, and motions to them quickly. You remember my brother, Dean, and this is his boyfriend, Cass, he says. Sarah blinks at Dean for a second, and then gives him an approving smile. Of course, it's nice to see you, Dean, and to meet you, Cass. Hey, Sarah, Dean says weakly, and Cass just nods a hello. Sam slides over, and Sarah joins them at their booth. So, what are you doing these days? He asks. Do you live here now? I just moved here to start my doctorate in art history and preservation, Sarah says. I got kind of pulled into investigating the histories of various pieces of art in the gallery once I realized some of them could be haunted, and I couldn't stop after that. That's so awesome, Sam says, smiling wide. Hey, have you seen the showing of Mayan artifacts that just got to the campus? I think they're open late tonight if you wanted to go. Sarah nods enthusiastically, then glances at Dean and Cass. I'd love to, but I don't want to interrupt your night out, she replies. Castiel looks at Dean, who is caught between admiring Sam's game and being annoyed that Sam is ditching them for a girl he found all on his own, and thankfully realizes he's going to have to do the talking. It's fine, he says. You should go, Sam. He turns to look at Dean with what Dean suspects is Cass's idea of a leer. Dean and I can occupy ourselves, Cass adds, and Sam laughs. Okay, he tells Sarah, and they both stand up. See you at home, guys. Nice to see you again, Dean, Sarah says, and Dean just nods and smiles. What just happened? Dean turns to ask Cass, genuinely confused, as Sam walks away with Sarah. Sam found a date, and most likely a girlfriend, at a bar, in the space of about 10 minutes with no help from either of us, Cass replies promptly, and Dean slaps him, just on principle. When Sam gets home that evening, Dean is waiting. Sam creeps in at about 2 a.m., obviously trying to avoid waking anyone, but Dean is determined to get this done now. Have a good time? He asks, giving away his position on the couch, and Sam jumps. Jesus! He yells. Yeah, I had a good time. What are you waiting up for? Just wanted to make sure this is what you want, Dean says gruffly. I've been throwing women at you for a month, and you kept saying you didn't want to date. And then you just up and find one out of the blue. I'm a little hurt, man. My taste in women's not good enough for you? Sam sits on the couch next to Dean and gets a concerned little wrinkle on his forehead. I wasn't lying, he says. I didn't want to date anyone until I saw Sarah again and realized I could have a second chance. Dean nods. I get it, as long as you're sure. She's pretty awesome, Sam says, and gorgeous, and knows about all the shit that goes bump in the night. What's not to be sure about? Wait, Dean says, grinning as he remembers something. I told you to marry her, didn't I? Back when you first met. Sam squints. I don't know. I usually tune out anything you say to me about women. Fucker, Dean says, and slugs Sam on the shoulder. I still get all the credit, whether you remember it or not. Sam smiles evilly. Sure, Dean, you're the most awesome matchmaker in the history of time. Wait until all the guys at the garage hear about your skill in the romantic arts. Dean's jaw drops. You wouldn't, he tells Sam desperately. Oh, I would, Sam replies, and heads off to bed with a satisfied grin. Dean sits on the couch for a minute and boggles at his life, his ridiculous, domestic, stupidly awesome life, and then heads to his own bedroom. Cass promised to be back in the morning, and Dean falls asleep in anticipation of waking up to some truly fantastic morning sex. He'll let Sam have this one, he decides. He's a good older brother. The end.